We need some. Do you must remember some vocal exercises from your days at Bretton Hall. They give you some little vocal stuff.
You'd be like. No, this is the greatest. This is like you're choking on cock.
teach me everything.
It was when we all had to pretend to be a tree. And embody the properties of tree. Yeah. And then the instructor walked around and went, no.
Now, boys, if you could just pop all your tops off and then we're going to pretend to be trees today. Turn that bloody light off!
It's like, and slowly, each vertebrae at a time, just roll up. Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about Kevin Smith almost being dead, Joss Whedon quitting Batgirl and Mute being absolutely balls.
And literally nothing else. What are we going to talk about this week, Tristan?
First, we're going to get through some news and then we're going to contemplate the top five films to watch on a Sunday when you're hungover.
Or if you're not hungover, just on a Sunday anyway, because basically Sundays, whether you're hungover or not, they fulfill the same role, which is just like they're a filler, aren't they?
Being in between Saturday and Monday.
Yeah, they're a nothing day. Nothing good ever happens apart from good films. So maybe we can help our audience out by suggesting good films for them to watch and then improve all of their horrible lives.
But first, we have got so much news.
What's in the news this week, Tristan?
So this week...
Hit me.
So this is the best one. Some divers in a lake in Minnesota discovered a full-size statue of Jason Voorhees.
Oh, I saw that. Yes.
Can you imagine shitting your pants?
So divers, I mean, fucking hell.
No, let's take
it
back. Somebody took the time and the effort not only to sculpt a life-size statue of Jason Voorhees, but then to
bury the fucker.
To hire a boat, go into the middle of a lake, and then dump it in there, hoping that one day somebody would come across it.
Fair play to him.
I think that's fucking awesome.
So what were people just, hunting for? What were they diving for?
It's just apparently it's an area that's popular with divers.
To look at what to do what?
Or to practice diving, Chris. I mean, if you look at a map, Minnesota's not exactly by the fucking sea, is it?
No, I just think it's a bit sinister that people just dive for no reason. Like, what are they doing down there? Hey, Jason Voorhees is pretty scary, though, isn't he?
Jason Voorhees.
Imagine seeing a Jason Voorhees in a lake that you're diving in. That's really terrifying.
Kevin Smith had a heart attack, didn't he?
That was pretty shocking, actually. We both like his podcast, don't we? Fat Man on Batman. That was quite sudden, wasn't it?
I mean, pretty much. He was doing two shows back to back.
Was it what, like live?
Yeah, live shows. And then he started feeling ill at the end of one. And then it turned out that he'd had a massive heart attack.
Yeah, and then that rolled into some controversy with James Gunn, the director. You see that?
No, I missed that.
Chris Pratt tweeted in support of Kevin Smith.
Right.
And ended his tweet. It felt, you know, for all intents and purposes, like a genuine tweet supporting him. So get well soon. Thoughts and prayers are with you, right? That created a backlash against Chris Pratt's tweet. People were saying, thoughts and prayers. Like, it was misread as being either ironic or sarcastic. I imagine that it wasn't. It didn't, to me, read like it was either of those things.
Why would it?
So people lost their fucking shit, mate, and started having a go at Chris Pratt for sending an ironic or sarcastic message to Kevin Smith. So James Gunn waded in, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy and those films which Chris Pratt was in, and had to fucking had to sit everyone down and explain to them that he probably wasn't being ironic or sarcastic. He genuinely wanted to offer thoughts and prayers to Kevin Smith. This is the state that Twitter is in at the moment. It's like a sort of melting pot of hysteria and fucking blame, and no one seems happy on it at all, apart from Kevin Smith, before he had a fucking heart attack. So it's such a fucking shame to see him like in a hospital bed, because he's an optimistic, genuinely like fun-loving, you know, character. So it created a whole Twitter storm around that. Shit was trending Twitter.
I missed that all. Fuck, that's. Did you send him a message?
What, Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Yes.
So did I.
Just, no, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Did you? Did you actually?
Of course I did.
I didn't.
I love that man.
What did you say? What did you... Just said, private?
I said...
did you DM him?
No, DM? I didn't DM him.
But anyway,
I just said the world's not ready for that yet.
Yeah, fair play to you.
Yeah, exactly. He's put like down a list of filmmakers that have influenced you. Like, he's like more than any others. Like, he's at the top of that list.
I like his stand-up where he talks about not signing an NDA when he went to Prince's house and then just blabbing. That was gold.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And all the, well, and this fucking Superman story that everyone knows inside out.
Something about giant spiders.
Yeah, and the Batman story as well. Scissors for hands.
Yeah.
There's something we both really need to talk about.
What is that?
It's on Netflix.
Netflix is in a bit of a state at the moment.
When
Do
it comes
you
to
agree
when
or disagree?
When it comes to films, they need a win. It might be Annihilation in a few weeks' time. I keep holding on for it.
I think I've seen that getting decent reviews on like aggregator websites like Rotten Tomatoes.
What about the one that we're about to tell everybody what it is?
You're talking about Mute.
I'm talking about Mute by Duncan Jones.
The new amazing sci-fi film by Duncan Jones, Zowie Bowie.
I can't believe you actually, had to write that down. Right, I watched this.
Hold on. Back up a minute. What do you mean Netflix needs a win?
Well, because Netflix has been getting a load of films at the moment that are either films that the studios are worried about.
Such as Cloverfield Paradox.
Cloverfield Paradox, Annihilation, just coming out. It's got an American release, but the studios don't think it's going to do well elsewhere. I think we said this on the last episode.
Hence, straight to Netflix.
Well, it's the new straight to video, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
But the thing is Netflix has, they've put aside, is it $2 billion for 80 movies over the next few years? That's their plan.
I don't know. I mean, it's an unprofitable business. So, like, it's a platform business. So it's a tech business, right? It's fine for tech businesses to be unprofitable because there's still revenue flowing through them, right? So it's still worth investing in and all that shit. So as long as it keeps burning money, as long as it keeps producing stuff, you can say to shareholders.
Well, they've got that good, they're in that good debt situation, aren't they?
Well, you can say shareholders, don't worry, when we do turn a profit, we'll be like in a position where you all, you know, make a fortune.
Because remember, Amazon didn't make a profit for like, was it 10 years?
At least 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, and now look at it. Yeah, so they've done some of their own films and they've been buying in other films and it's not going well so far.
In terms of how well received the films are getting,
actually,
like critical reviews.
Yeah, I'm talking critical review because in terms of they measure it by whether their servers break or not, pretty much.
Yeah, what Netflix do.
Yeah, Netflix, but which is a weird milestone because like Iron Fist broke the servers.
Did it?
But it's shit.
Oh, I can't.
And everyone
with that.
Knows it's shit.
I mean, they say it broke the servers. So, I mean, I don't understand like what currency they're trading in. It sounds quite subjective and colloquial.
Well, they won't release any official figures.
Exactly. Rather than say this achieved like a, whatever, 4 million viewers over the.
This is one of the mediums where you can actually give direct figures. They exist.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like in the old days where you had to guess about TV ratings and shit like that.
Yeah, and you know, use like a panel-based approach where you give 100 people in the country, like, fucking, you panel them. And
you can literally
model that to
watch,
say whatever.
You can find out how many times it was watched by how many different accounts. So, I don't know, but they keep getting it wrong.
Do they keep getting it wrong, though? Or does it just feel like they keep getting it wrong? Because I don't know what
the bad films
were. Well,
there was that Brad Pitt film. That was the first one that was made for Netflix, about 70 million, 70, 80 million, and it was pants.
So they're quite small budgets, then.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, see, what's exciting about it is this is where the new mid-range films could start. Amazon and Netflix are where those films that have vanished from the cinema are going to start appearing again, and that is exciting. But the only film they've had that's been successful so far for Netflix critically has been the one with the giant pig. You know, the one
Okra.
Yeah.
No, Okja.
Which
Okra,
I still
Okra
have,
is a vegetable.
I still haven't actually watched, but everybody says that's amazing.
Yeah.
And it won a load of awards as well.
I think John Ronson co-wrote it, the British writer.
Ron Johnson. So talk to me about Mute, because I started watching it and I couldn't get more than, I got 15 minutes into it and then was like, oh, fuck this.
I think you text me saying that I gave up on Mute. And I was like, mate, I'm literally watching it right now. And I thought, fuck, this is awful. It was. It was.
Beautiful, like it's a beautiful view of the future. It's like Altered Carbon, but nowhere near as mental.
Hold on. What's this film about?
It's a farce, almost, isn't it?
The film starts with the scene of a boy floating face down in water,
which,
with blood coming out.
Yeah, looking like he's had his throat cut.
Until it cuts
above the water, and then you see that it's a speedboat above him, and it's been a speedboat accident.
Which the Guardian columnist beautifully pointed out as one of those quite common Amish boat-related incidents that you see by fucking lakes these days. And he's fished out of the water by his Amish family. And that's it. Then it fucks that off and reappears in modern day. With a future, like a future vision of Berlin, which looks like a cross between Mega City 1 from Danny Cannon's Judge Dredd, starring Sylvester Stallone, and Altered Carbon, which is on Netflix at the moment, right?
Which is also shit.
No, don't say that, because I'm quite enjoying it. I am still on episode 2, but I'm keeping it on the back burner. So he works in a bar, right?
Fucking, we don't have to give them this much detail.
No, but we do, because the point is, because he's Amish, he's rejected technology, right? Because he's Amish.
Yeah.
And in the future,
what religion is he?
Amish. Right. And in the future, remember, you know what the future's like? It's full of technology, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
Hey, it's like a fish out of water story, isn't it? No, because not once does it really dwell... It does, but it doesn't really dwell on the fact that he is a fish out of water like it should do. Because if you're in a... If you imagine, like... the future vision of Los Angeles from Blade Runner, let's say it's set in that city but during the daytime, if you put a guy that has rejected technology into that plot, you know, that's a fucking whole world of isolation that he feels. And he's also mute, right? So you would imagine that the story is about how a person has to cope with that isolation and being cut off from society.
It's not that, though, is it?
It's not, though, is it? No, because he just works in a bar in a club. Like, it's like with neon lights and, like, sexy ladies.
He's just a dude who works in a club but doesn't know how to work his phone.
That's basically it.
Getting to it, his girlfriend goes missing one day. And in his quest to find her, he starts bumping up against the wrong people. And it's the wrong people in two senses. He starts bumping into gangsters and people of the underworld.
Yeah.
But also, they're nothing to do with his girlfriend's disappearance.
Yes.
And because of the way he treats them,
yeah.
it kicks off like a whole turf war that has nothing to do with his girlfriend vanishing.
Oh,
as far
yeah.
As far as I got.
Yeah, okay.
It's got Paul Rudd.
Oh, he's so miscast. Oh my, that's horrendous, isn't it?
I mean, I like Paul Rudd. I think he's extremely entertaining. I think his moustache is terrifying.
Yeah.
It's the scariest moustache I've ever seen.
He's almost as miscast as Justin Theroux.
Is that who the pedophile
yes.
guy is?
Yes, it's Justin Theroux.
It's very weird. Like, is he a pedo? Is he not?
No,
why
he
are
is.
You friends with him?
Oh, in one of the most like gut-wrenchingly tone-deaf and misjudged scenes. I don't know if you've tapped out by this point, when he actually confronts him about it. So I don't know
how much time, because he teases him about it a lot of the time, saying, keep your hands off my daughter or off the babysitter or stuff like that. And
yeah, so there's this weird subplot. It was a pedo subplot, right, which doesn't belong in this film at all. And it's like Justin Theroux's character, a surgeon, and he, for some reason, like, he also admits general patients, because there's like girls coming in there, and he sets up a camera to film them while they walk on a treadmill with like a prosthetic leg, as in like physical therapy, and he positions a camera looking at them from behind so he can kind of see through their surgical gowns. And then Paul Rudd's character catches him out and calls him up on it. He loses his shit, holds him up against the wall, and then has a massive go at him. And then within about 5 seconds, his phone rings, he gets good news, and he goes, hey, I got good news. And then they both go out partying together. And it's just like, what? That's so representative of how much of a fucking car crash this film is tonally. It's all over the place. It dares to talk about subject matter that's like that. And then it totally sort of disregards that anyway and carries on like nothing matters.
It's like the first draft of a script that's written in Crayola crayon.
Just like we said about Cloverfield Paradox. It is so, so badly still in draft form. And the tragedy is that I like Duncan Jones as a director. Moon was good. Source Code was alright. Can't be fucked with Warcraft, if I'm honest.
Warcraft's all over the place.
But it feels like there is a decent film in this script somewhere. You know, his vision of future Berlin, which is massively stolen, like I said, from Danny Cannon's 90s version of Judge Dredd on Mega City 1. But fuck me, it just falls so flat on its ass. It's an awful,
awful film.
Did you make it all the way to the end?
Yeah.
Mate, I'm there.
I messaged Chris, and Chris said, oh, mate, you haven't seen the last 20 minutes. It gets so much better. I was like, really? He's like, no.
No, it's fucking shite. It gets worse. I can't remember how it ends. Do you know? Oh, my God. This actually happened, actually. I totally forgot about this. We paused it, Em and I.
Oh, you watched it with Em?
Yeah, I watched it with Em.
What did Em say?
Fuck this, is what she said, mate. I'm now buried deep in a season of Anne of Green Gables for my sins now. That's her payback. I'm not really watching it. We paused it because there was one point where he talks to the main character, the mute guy character, who's played by one of the Skarsgårds. He talks to someone. Someone gives him some advice and says, basically, you now need to go and meet this person to progress the plot. And he goes around the corner and he pauses and then the guy that's just said it, his words ring in his head again. And it's just like the fucking Simpsons when Homer's queuing up for dental insurance and he hears Lenny in his head, dental plan. And we both pissed ourselves laughing. And then for some reason, this is so fucking weird. I got so bored of this film. I paused it, went onto YouTube, and then started playing clips of The Fucking Room, mate. The Room. And I have no idea why, except I do, don't I? Because subconsciously, my brain was telling me, this is farcical, let's watch The Room. And then so I showed Em some clips of The Room, because she hadn't seen it. And we were like, what the fuck, this is hilarious. And then we went back to it. But that was not a conscious decision, I swear. This film is as bad as The Room. It's like, it's The Room 2049. And I text that to you at the time. Did I text that to you at the time? I should have texted that to you at the time. It was gold. I tell you what makes Mute even less palatable was that just a couple of days before, we'd seen The Shape of Water at the cinema, which is a film about a character who is mute and then has to deal with the world around them, and you see how that affects them. There couldn't be a more night and day perspective of how to treat a character. It's the same character, except of course they're not Amish. You know, it's like oh my God. And Del Toro is a masterclass in building character just through visuals alone, visuals and sound alone. And sadly, you know, Duncan Jones is not.
There's another recommendation that I saw on Netflix through a series of adverts and posts about a horror film called Veronica.
Yep.
So it was a Spanish horror, so immediately I was like, ooh, okay. Because Rec is phenomenal.
You know, I haven't seen Rec. Oh, is it good?
It's relentless. There are so few horror films where the interest curve just goes up.
Oh.
Right to the very last scene.
Yeah.
It's fucking relentless.
And Em and I were talking about this, and Rec 2 is supposed to be even better.
Rec 2 was good. I don't think it was better at all, but it was good. But also that same year, The Orphanage came out as well, which is a great film, and that was produced by Del Toro.
Yep.
So it's still got that fairy tale horror kind of feel to it. Anyway, so saw a lot of recommendations, Spanish horrors, like Scariest Thing You'll Ever See, blah blah blah, the usual shit. So I thought, wicked, check it out.
Scariest Thing You'll Ever See, mate.
Oh my God, it was awful.
Why?
It was so bad.
Why was it so bad?
It started off about demonic possession with children, which was like, okay, fair enough. Starts with a Ouija board. Okay, can you not think of anything better? It's ruined by music more than anything. You look at the 80s resurgence now of music and things like Stranger Things and stuff like that. But it's not 80s music, is it? It's remixed, it's reimagined 80s music.
South Park did
a wicked thing where they were walking around.
Yeah, you want real 80s music?
Yeah, and they're like, what's this? This is actual 80s music. This is awful. But it had actual synth 80s music on it.
But modern day?
No, old classic. It was almost like it had a disco soundtrack.
Which was
for horror, doesn't build tension.
What, disco? Too fucking right, it doesn't.
And then, when the bad shit starts happening, it's playing music that's so out of... the type of horror music that's so out of character, it might as well be playing Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, really?
So, the demon's coming in, and the shadow's looming over the child, and it's like...
So Veronica is called.
So pass on Veronica.
Is that a Netflix thing again?
Yeah, it's Netflix. If you see it, pass on. It's awful.
Netflix, fucking hell. Should we stop watching Netflix now, mate? It's not working, is it?
No, we've got to keep going. Got to keep going for the series.
Okay.
Got to keep going for the series because Mindhunter is fantastic.
Is that David Finchenberg?
Yeah. David 25 takes or more Finchenberger. This is about the birth of behavioural science at the FBI.
Oh, okay.
At this point, in the story, the phrase or the term serial killer hasn't even been coined.
Oh, what's this like, the 70s?
It's 60s into 70s.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay, yeah, because I don't know. We'll give it a 10-year leeway. And it's the first episode's a little bit slow, and then from then on, they're doing interviews with all the different serial killers. There's two FBI agents who are out on the road teaching courses to cops.
Oh, this sounds quite good, actually.
It's fucking brilliant. And it's about... Yeah. It's got really nice characters in it as well. And I don't mean nice as in friendly. I mean, like, the boss, who's like a dick, yeah, but actually has a brain. So he's against what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he actually sees the value of it, he then supports them and helps them. Do you know what I mean? And
I know what you mean.
I love the characters.
Yeah, he's like the boss out of Last Action Hero.
I just shot someone and I did it on purpose.
That's Charles Dance.
Yeah, Charles Dance is
not
the
him.
Best. I know, but I'm only quoting Charles Dance because he's the only thing worth it in that film.
What's Fincher's involvement in Mindhunter?
As far as I know, he just set up the first, directed the first episode. But so, I don't know, I haven't been looking at the credits. It's literally been skipped, like trying to get into the next episode as soon as possible.
So kind of like he did with House of Cards.
Yeah.
So what does he include, a pat the dog moment then right at the start? Well, for the I presume there's a main character.
No, it starts with somebody
must have a pat the dog moment.
Starts with a failed negotiation with a dude blowing his own head off with a shotgun.
That could be it. So what's Kevin Spacey's
Kevin Spacey kills the dog.
Yes. Which is genius, right? Because the pat the dog moment is a cinema trope whereby the hero character that you want to,
say protagonist,
hero character. So to bring the audience on their side so that you actually get behind the hero, usually they do something.
Make you sympathise or empathise with them.
Yeah, exactly. Which can be like, if a dog is in distress, like pat it. And it's literally that simple. What the genius of House of Cards is that Kevin Spacey is awarded that moment in the very first episode. Instead of patting it, he kills it. So Fincher is a fucking genius for shit like that. So I wondered if there's a moment in that gives the audience a chance to totally understand a character in one scene.
You don't get to totally understand him, but in that first scene you sympathise with him. It's like, oh, you're not very good at your job because you've just failed to talk this person down.
I want to watch
that. In the worst possible way.
Okay, so tell me more about Mindhunter.
It's got that slow Fincher pace.
Yep.
Like I said, same kind of pace as House of Cards. In that respect, but every frame is a picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's almost as if they sat down and said, fuck, we've only got time to shoot one angle. They have it. I mean, there's coverage.
Yeah.
But it's just a case of like, shit, if we only could do one shot for the scene, what would that shot be?
Did you see The Unabomber, also on Netflix, starring Paul Bettany?
No.
And Sam Worthington.
That would be like acting to a concrete wall.
Why do you hate Sam Worthington?
No, I don't actually. I really like Sam Worthington.
He's really watchable.
Sam Worthington,
mate,
hasn't had a chance to be really good yet.
He has.
Well, I mean, okay, he's had lots of chances, but he's been in bad stuff.
Somersault
he's creating. I didn't know
yes.
anyone else had seen Somersault except me.
Yeah, and made me watch it.
It's a great film.
It's a great
film. And
he's
great in it.
And Ben Mendelsohn. Unabomber. The Unabomber. It's a 7 out of 10 Netflix drama, and it's a series, and it's about...
See, they're good at that.
Yeah, they are really good at that. It's a solid 7 out of 10, mate. You know, like, it's not great, but it's not shit. Therefore, it does pass the time pretty well, which sometimes, when is all you need. You know, I fancy a bit of above average but not great storytelling that lasts about 8 hours.
I'd be happy to be in the just above average
yes.
but not great bracket.
Yes, it's perfect,
isn't it?
But what you get, for a 7 out of 10 Netflix drama is moments of actually quite good writing. You know, and obviously there's quite a lot of mediocrity. It's a bit harsh. But that was good. So Bettany's a great performance in it.
Bettany's always great, though.
Bettany is gold, isn't he? Whether he's playing a cello wielding sidekick in Master and Commander,
brilliant,
or a dual wielding CGI cape monster from Avengers.
Disney, I told you there's so much news. Disney are possibly in trouble over the Solo posters. Have you seen that?
Plagiarism, mate.
Severe. I mean,
and you know, like, obviously this is being broadcast so we can get sued, but they fucking ripped that shit off, mate.
Somebody has been...
Yeah, Disney ripped it off. Disney literally ripped it off.
Yeah, they're going to be in trouble over that.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they're not, because they're Disney and this guy's like literally got no lawyers. It looks like he was making templates to go on, like, I know, graphic driver or something like that, from judging by his designs.
Well, okay,
it's a template. Some designer at Disney has bought a template for $9 on the web and then turned it into the posters for Solo.
What were they ripping off? What was it promoting?
Was it? It was like different music types. It was like jazz, electro.
That was it. Yeah, yeah. Disney blatantly ripped the shit out of that. Ripped it off because it's exactly the same.
Yeah, from color palette down to all the different. Because if you've not seen it, there's five different designs for their posters, and this other dude's done five different designs for his poster, and their color schemes between the different
color palettes
match.
The same, isn't it?
One
of them says like. The names of the characters, aren't they? Like Lando, and it'll be in purple. Chewie, and it'll be like in
orange,
brown.
Yeah.
Like with hair everywhere. It's quite fun, really, isn't it? All the letters are like bubble writing with hair coming out
They're
of them.
Great.
Chewie sat there on his like his little ship as a little baby Chewie, because he's only four in this Solo film, isn't he?
Yeah, Disney, somebody's going to get fired. Somebody's going to get sued. Somebody's definitely going to get fired.
I hope someone doesn't get fired at Disney, mate, because they're a really nice company.
What about the purity rings, huh? Speaking of Disney.
Please don't pray.
John Favreau! Announced today, John Favreau is to write and executively produce a live-action Star Wars series, as yet untitled, for Disney's streaming platform.
Wait, what size John Favreau are we talking?
Oh, I don't know how big he is at the moment.
Big John Favreau. He's my favourite John Favreau.
John Favreau, when he's like 200-pound John Favreau.
Yes, he's more... That's the one I like.
Yeah, that's what he seems like. He's at his most creative.
I'm not body shaming. I just like him when he's like that. All right?
Okay.
I like Fat Fav. Andy Serkis is redoing Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, isn't he?
What are you talking about?
There's a new Christopher Robin film out called...
Wait, how have you got from Winnie the Pooh to Jungle Book?
Because they're doing it again. Like...
When did they do Winnie the Pooh last?
Goodbye Christopher Robin came out last year, right, starring Donald Gleeson and Margot Robbie, right?
Okay,
this year,
no idea.
Another film about Winnie the Pooh, starring Ewan McGregor as Christopher Robin, is coming out.
Ewan McGregor's a million years old. How is he going to be?
He's not a million years old. He's like 32.
Yeah, but he's not 32.
And within the last 2 years, Favreau directed the last Jungle Book film, right? Which was kind of which I haven't seen. But it was live action. So Andy Serkis's next film is called Mowgli, and it's another Jungle Book film. It's the same shit, mate.
Right. What relevance does that have to fucking Winnie the Pooh?
Because it's two films. It's the
so
same
nothing.
Film keeps
There's
getting remade.
Literally nothing at all.
Yes, because they keep remaking the same shit.
But isn't it going to tell a different
2 years
isn't
of
it
each
tell
other?
A totally different tale though?
What is
the Mowgli? This Mowgli thing.
No, it's going to be... There's only one story to tell. What else can you say? It's like not Mowgli set in like Berlin 2049, is it? Like he's left on the riverbank by like Amish fucking wolves and then you never see them again. He has to fucking traverse modern day life with like a fucking mobile phone that pops out of his pocket and then can't work it and then... And the same with Winnie the Pooh. Like, he's not going to fucking wake up, is he? Like, in the future, like, face down, like, on a fucking riverbed covered in blood. And there's an Amish, like, Christopher Robin character, and he drags him off, and his girlfriend gets fucking kidnapped, and Eeyore is a bad guy surgeon. Do you know what I mean? Why do they keep making this shit?
Yeah. Right.
All that's true.
Yeah.
All of that is true. Why are we talking about Jungle Book?
Favreau.
Why are we talking about Favreau?
Because Favreau's working on a new Star Wars thing.
Is he? Is he?
Right.
Is he?
That was announced today, yeah. So
I didn't see that. Tell me about that. I need to know.
There's no information other than it's an untitled... This is the information. It's a live-action Star Wars series, untitled, with no release date, but for Disney's streaming platform.
Do Disney have an earnings call coming up?
You just said adult words and I don't understand them.
What time of year is it? So Disney, obviously, to appease the shareholders and to, in layman's terms, convince people to buy Disney shares, you got to get people excited about all the future projects that they're going to be making so that you can give people confidence that they buy shares and invest in that company like Disney, then they'll make a return. That's why you get shit that means nothing, but is designed to be broadcast to get people excited about them. Like, Rian Johnson's just been given 3 new Star Wars films. Oh, yeah, when are they coming out? What? What are they going to be about? Huh? You know Jon Favreau? Yeah. We've just given him, whatever you just said to me, Tristan, a series to make. Really? When? Don't know. What's it about? Fuck off. Yeah, that's why, mate. So the reason why they're not giving any details right. is because there are no details. But it doesn't matter, because to Disney, it's a business decision to appease shareholders.
Last of all, Chris, do you want to tell me
yes
about the Ready Player One posters?
Oh,
because it started badly.
Who's in charge?
With a dude climbing down a ladder with a really, really long leg.
Yes, which looks ridiculous until you realise that it's actually anatomically correct when you compare it to his other leg, which is at sort of like waist height.
So he's got it waist height, but is his knee up to his ear?
No, his legs are the same size. He's not just got, as most people have reported, one giant leg. He's got fucking 2 giant legs on a normal sized body. It's weird as fuck. Boy, this is an awful, like awful marketing campaign so far for this film. They started out with that terrible poster, and now they've released about 12 more terrible posters, which all look terrible and more awful as well. Some other film just released fake 80s posters as well. Oh no, it was Stranger Things. So in the run-up to the second series of Stranger Things being released, they had like repurposed 80s movie posters with the Stranger Things cast in them, right?
Okay.
So it's doing that, which I guess, I mean, fair enough. I mean, Ready Player One, a lot of the IP is in the 80s anyway, so I'm sure that they had this planned well in advance, so they're not reacting to the Stranger Things posters, right? I don't fucking understand. There's nothing wrong with repurposing those 80s posters and then putting these characters from Ready Player One in it. What I don't get is why it's a shitty, like, CGI character and not the...
What, the actual dude himself?
Yeah, because it looks wank.
I know why I...
So, I'm sorry to swear.
Logically, I get why they've done it, but they should have just put him... Yeah, they should have put live action him there.
Am I not getting this because I haven't read the book?
Maybe it wouldn't be that much of a change. Maybe you'd be looking at the posters and be like, and not even noticing it was somebody different. But because it's a CGI, because it's his avatar, isn't it? Maybe that's what. But the avatar looks. Really weird is I've read Ready Player One like 3 or 4 times. Not once have I actually ever imagined what his avatar would look like.
Really? Important.
I mean, it is important to the book.
But really, you're imagining your face though, aren't you? Because you're in the book.
No.
Like, what if I was in Ready Player One?
I'd be imagining the middle bit of you. Just the middle bit. Just the top and bottom's not important.
What, on your face?
Yeah.
Christ.
All over my face. So you're not impressed, are you?
I don't understand. Am I not getting this because I haven't read the book? Does it, like, because there's 4 CGI characters on these posters in place of the Lost Boys or the Goonies.
It's only predicted to do 34 million. I was so excited when I found out that Spielberg was directing this particular book, because I thought if anyone can do it, he can. And I got a horrible feeling this is going to be a car crash.
This will be the one film that you can, I think, legitimately claim Spielberg phoned in. I cannot see one reason why Steven Spielberg would give a fuck about making this film. He's well beyond this shit. He's a far more mature storyteller now. Look at the recent films he's made. Decades. Yeah, he doesn't want to tell like a CGI filled, you know. I think the last time he did that was probably War of the Worlds, maybe, after Minority Report. He's so done with this shit. I don't think Spielberg wants to make this. I can see why he'd want to make the BFG, because as a kind of mature storyteller or as a mature director, you know, it's a good story to tell. It's a classic, it's Roald Dahl.
It's the chances of going back and playing with old IP or IP that you never got a chance to play with.
He doesn't care. He does not care about Ready Player One. Doesn't give a shit. He's going to phone it in and it's going to be palpable. It'll be like tangibly fucking phoning in. What else is in the news?
Joss Whedon has quit.
Whedon.
Upside down ginger egg.
Whedon wrote and directed the first Avengers film, one of the highest grossing films of all time. He wrote and directed the second Avengers ensemble film, which he himself said he disliked, I think, and he hated the creative process on it.
Yeah, he and Kevin Feige had quite a falling out by all accounts.
Yeah, what happened there then?
Nobody knows, but it ended up with him also quitting Twitter.
Yeah.
He committed suicide on Twitter. Twitter suicide.
Hey, don't joke about that, mate. Trigger warning.
And trigger warning. And then went to the other side, like moved from from Marvel to DC.
Can you believe it? And did a great job rescuing the Justice League film.
Oh.
So he injected that with humour, the happy dance, the dance of joy, and there's some more Buffy references.
Do the dance of joy.
What a fucking waste of time this is for Joss Whedon. He's much better than these like wishy-washy DC films.
Yeah, he is much better, but he's wanted to play... Like, he's wanted to write Batman for a long time. He's got a take on it and has talked about having a take on it for years. Before the prospect of Nolan's Batman, Joss Whedon was talking about wanting to do Batman.
Was he?
Yeah.
And did he say what he wanted to do with it?
No.
Okay.
But judging the way he did drama and stuff, like, I was interested.
Yeah.
Like, straight away. This is like the people's fucking geek. So if it's not Kevin Smith, then it's Joss Whedon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, so this was the people's geek wanting to direct Batman. Holy shit, that would be amazing. And then, obviously, DC have... done what they've done with Batman, which has just been horrendous to watch at every step of the way. But he had quite a take for Batgirl.
Yeah, okay. So he's in line to write and direct a Batgirl movie, right?
Now, there's been a lot of backlash against Whedon recently for a really bizarre reason. Years ago, he wrote a draft of Wonder Woman, which Warner Brothers didn't use, which has got him accused of being quite sexist. I don't get why there's a backlash against this script that he wrote, one script that he wrote that didn't get picked up.
Right.
That has caused people to turn on him from all the work that he's done up until that point.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that. I didn't hear any of that. So he's getting shit now for a spec script or a script that he wrote years ago.
Again, just Twitter going nuts.
Yeah, okay.
Twitter doing what Twitter does best now. He's going, oh, yeah, I'm angry at this too.
Yeah, I know. It's that air around at the time. That's not going to go away for another 5 years or so.
So whatever the hell's going on, he's dropped Batgirl now. So
did he give a reason for... ditching this Batgirl film?
Not publicly, no.
Right, okay.
But if it's the same shit that's going on at DC at the moment, I can imagine the wrong people are in charge, because they're still, okay, Schneider's not coming back now, he's done. Whoever was making those decisions, they're the wrong ones.
I mean, there's no showrunner. There's no Kevin Feige.
No, there isn't. Character. They don't have that.
Kevin Feige's Marvel's showrunner at the moment, right? He's their kind of creative director, isn't he? He has been responsible for, you know, wrangling all the right talent and having a vision and working backwards from that.
Yeah, he's been telling
fucking 10, 20 years.
The advantage that Marvel have got, they don't have like a 2 hour, like 2 hours of dialogue stretched out for each film, but they've got the story already written. They've got a great tried and tested framework. So, you know, the source material they're working from is great, and it's the same people in control of the source material that's in charge of creating the screenplays from it.
Yep.
Which is a unique position to be in. And you've got somebody who has the entire story in their head from start to finish. There's very few decision makers or hierarchical committee that they have to go through at Marvel in order to get stuff done, whereas it's different with Warner Brothers and DC.
Yeah, who are rudderless and are just kind of like clutching and being very reactive rather than, like, it looks like, I don't have a fucking clue, do I? It feels like they're being more reactive rather than proactive as a studio. So, oh shit, Marvel of making multi-billion dollar ensemble films. We need to do one quickly. There's not enough time to get the talent in place, to write it, to redraft it, and to produce it, you know, well enough to the same standard, because it's a reaction to someone else doing it, rather than Kevin Feige's method, which was to plan it in advance, right? It's quite simple. So I don't see a way out of this for DC, who are already on the back foot and can only now be reactive. So I don't see light at the end of the tunnel for DC. And that's what I saw when I read the news that Joss Whedon was ditching that Batgirl film. He doesn't see light at the end of the tunnel for DC either.
No,
and they're probably applying the same pressure to him. Like, it needs to come out now before people get bored and don't talk about it anymore. You need to do it. And he's like, that's not how filmmaking works.
Yeah, you've got to do it. It's got to be out in a year and that's it. Yes. And that's the thing. Marvel can bring out a film every year because they've had it planned and they've had it.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas this is like, you know, oh, could you write a Batgirl script? He goes, oh yeah, cool. Can I have like a year's go? Fuck that. You've got 4 months.
Yes.
Like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So it's never going to happen unless they correct it now. Okay, so that was this week's news. Let's move on to the main body of the show now for the next 45 seconds. Okay. What did you want to talk about?
I want to say that what were the best films to watch when you've got a hangover on a Sunday, which is a pointless day. We've already discussed this. So
any day with a hangover might as well be a Sunday.
Exactly. Right. So my films would be The Last Crusade, Back to the Future, Goodfellas, Stargate, or Team America.
I've got Raging Bull, Kiss Me Deadly, Casablanca, Citizen Kane, 12 Angry Men, or The Searchers. Okay, guys, thanks for listening. That was our show. Next time, we're going to talk in detail about the films we just referenced then. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Pinterest, and wait for it, MySpace.